Hi folks, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carroll. Welcome you to the latest podcast from the Banter team. This week we're looking at the business of food. The Country Choice Deli and Cafe opened in Nenagh in 1982 and the Burns Smokehouse business opened in County Clare in 1989. Many years later in a much different Ireland, both are still in business and still growing. We were joined at Banter at Bloom by Peter Ward from Country Choice and Bridgetta Curtin from Burns Smokehouse to hear from them about the changing environment for an Irish food business.
Hi folks, welcome back to Banter here at Bloom. This is a panel called Business of Food, and we're joined by two people who've got very interesting stories to tell about their journey in terms of food businesses in Ireland. Over here on my... it's Sunday morning, right, extreme right. Originally from Sweden and now from Clare, we've got Bridgetta Curtin next to her from Nenagh in County Tipperary. We have Peter Ward from Country Choice. Please give them a round of applause. Like Peter, when I was talking to you a few weeks ago about this, you painted a very exotic picture of Ireland in 1982. You said it was a country full of hillman hunters, phone boxes, and bad roads. So, like, I mean, what possessed you to start a business in the first place then?
I suppose everything is economic. I had gone to Nenagh when I was 18 to work for a couple of months, and I really liked the town and. I went to a dance in the tennis club one night, what they used to call a hop. Nobody knows anymore what a hop is. Went to a hop in the tennis club and met my wife. And, you know, she wasn't moving. Her mother was there, her father was there, her aunts were there, her uncles were there, everybody. She wasn't moving. And I was kind of mendicant at that time. I had left County Meath. The ancient East it was at that time. And now Tipperary is the ancient East, in case you don't know.
I know that.
So I went to Nenagh. And then I had left for 2 years and I said, God, I love that town and the lake and the mountains. And I said, I really have to find a way of, we're going to get married and find a way of living there. So we bought a shop and we were both age 22. And I had worked for Dunn Stores and they do teach you how to put your chest out when you're very young. And they give you a lot of confidence, I have to say, at the time. It was only a short period with them. But then we just opened a shop in Kenyon Street and I was terrified to call it a deli at the time because, you know, a deli was a Reuben sandwich in New York at that time. It certainly wasn't a shop in Nenagh. And Nenagh's one of those towns that if they thought you were above your station, you'd be brought down pretty quickly. So the first day I opened, I said, I have to get the message out here very, very... we were crazy the first day we opened. It was mad. But I said, I have to get the message out very clearly. So we put... Mary made brown bread and she made blackcurrant jam. And we put a massive bowl of duck eggs in the window. And that said it all, really. That was the exact design. And we always said that no matter how far we go in food and no matter what we do, and we've moved along a long, long way from where we were as personally at 22 years of age, but we haven't lost today blackcurrant jam, really good brown soda bread, duck eggs, beef across with my daughters on Country Choice on tour in the pavilion over there. So the idea was we never actually lost that. It was a spot on the wall that was always in front of us and it was part of our journey. But the journey has been amazing and whirlwind, but I sound like my father now. I don't know where it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. So that was you starting out in 1982. Bridgetta, I mean, like, talk to us about like what it was like in 1989 when you set up the Burns Smokehouse.
Yeah, I came from Sweden back in the 80s and was into marine biology and thought that coming from the Baltic was pretty amazing to taste the salinity of the Atlantic and the amount of species, different species of seaweed and things like that. So back in the 80s, you know, there was a lot of tourism. We came to Listenvona, which is 8 kilometers away from the cliffs of Moher, and I met my husband and I decided to move over. It was easier for me to do that than him to move. He kind of said, well, I'm not leaving Listenvona, so okay, fair enough. But the Cliffs of Moher has been absolutely instrumental. The fact that we were living on the west coast of Ireland, the middle of nowhere, but actually center of universe because of tourism. If we didn't have tourism, we would not have survived where we were. And that gave us a platform to open up a food business. Peter's traditionally from he comes from a pub, which was a bakery and a pub There was a bakery there until the 50s when they closed, the bigger bakers closed down the smaller bakers, effectively, and the state. So he had a food background, I had a food background, and we wanted to work with food. Yeah. So we wanted to open up something for people who are traveling through the amazing barren landscape and going into the, at the to the Cliffs of Moher. We wanted to start something that they could taste, something that was produced in the area. When I travel out, you know, we were going to Sicily at some stage and we went through this village called Marsala. And it's like kind of, oh, Marsala, Marsala wine. All right, so this is where the Marsala wine is made. So when you go traveling, it's just such an experience to not only see the landscape, but also taste the flavors of the produce that's been made in the area. So we've moved way, like light years ahead from the time back in the 80s when we were the only food producer showcasing our products, allowing people to come in and visit what we our premises, looking at an education experience of what is smoking about, how do you smoke salmon, why do you smoke salmon, this is an ancient tradition, and that food craft we wanted to, you know, express and talk about and also give people an opportunity to bring some of our produce with them home or for a picnic or whatever. So that's kind of the principle. And also, of course, part of our principle was source locally. We were both brought up like that. We were hunter-gatherer. My father was a hunter-gatherer. We had everything that we ate. We either foraged, fished, shot, grew ourselves. So that's kind of the background of the two of us, actually. And so we have been actually managing to buy 100% Irish produce from day one, whether it's the mackerel from Killybegs, the trout we get from Goatsbridge, and the salmon that we get either wild, small quantities of wild, and the organically farmed salmon. Okay. So that's how we source our products.
Right. It's interesting that in both cases, I mean, your business came around because of a relationship. You know, you mean, like, I mean, you met your husband, DeBurn, and you met Mary down in Nina, you know? I want to go back to, I suppose, to Nina, and you kind of said that Nina had a kind of a way of putting you back in your box in a way. And, like, if you're trying to get your head up above the parapet in many ways, it'd push you back down, Peter. I mean, when you were starting the food business in the 1980s, you know, I mean, what like, aside from the brown bread and the duck eggs, what else were you selling then? What else was in demand?
Well, you know, I just mentioned something there, Jim, that Brigitte mentioned about her background. I was coming in here Tuesday morning at about 5:15. I was coming through the Phoenix Park and I was coming in here for compliance and get set up. And I thought that when I was a kid, I grew up on a farm in Navan. And I just thought of all the times that I came through that park with my father before I was 10 years of age in a lorry heading into Prussia Street to sell cattle. And we sold cattle every Wednesday morning, cattle and sheep in Prussia Street. And we turned around. He went to Hanlon's for a Jemison at 7. We got Cole Taylor Keith. And we were back home in County Meath at 9 o'clock for school. And we used to walk into school like warriors. And the master would say, "Where were ye?" And we would say, "We were in Dublin, sir." And he'd say, "Clean your boots before you come in here." And we'd clean our boots and we'd walk in. And that was our whole background in food. And I thought about that, the relationship of bringing all those cattle into Dublin to sell. And I was coming up that road here with a ton of beef, Hereford beef, red-whited, in the back of my van to sell over there again. And I thought, here I am doing what my father did. And I remember the first day, my two girls are over there. They're two young graduates and they run that lovely business, Country Choice, on tour. And the first time, about 5 years ago, they went to the fair in Charleville. And I was sick with worry because I thought of myself at 22 opening my shop in Nina. And I thought of my girls going off with the van to Charleville and I wasn't allowed to go with them. And they wanted to sell this beef again themselves. And they had a grill. And I said, "Will they put the gas on right? Will they blow up the half of Charleville, the whole lot?" And we came back that evening. And my mother was visiting from County Meath. And she was 75 at the time. She's now 81. And she says, "Girls, I want to tell you the way I felt," she said, "when I was 21. And I drove a lorry of turkeys, live turkeys, up to sell them at the back of the forecourts. We sold some to Cartons in Halston Street," she said, "now Manor Farm, and they didn't take all of them. I let down the lorry at the back of the forecourts," she said, "and I sold them," she said. "I'll never forget to today," she said, "the way my heart fluttered with nervousness, because I killed them on the spot," she said, "for people." And I never forget that. And I was thinking, I felt like that opening the shop, and my girls felt like that going to Charleville. And it's I suppose, it's the excitement of food that drives you. But to get back down to the question about Nina, my first customer in Nina in 1982 asked me for two things. And I remember this because I had my mouth open, and for once in my life, I didn't have an answer. One was Earl Grey tea. No, Lapsang. Lapsang Souchong. And the second one was a camembert. And I managed, of course, but that customer went on to make pâté for me. But you must remember, at the time, the readers of the Irish Times in Nina were reading Theodora Fitzgibbon and her husband Constantine, that travelled all over Europe bringing back exotic. And people were making lemon syllabubs and salmon mousse, and they were eating avocados in Nina. And we had... Nina was an unusual town because we had definitely the strongest farmer class in Tipperary in it, with the mart and the creamery, and it's still the same. But we also had the Raj. We had the end of the Raj along the lake, the country estates, and it was not unusual for somebody to tell me that they were making kedgeree or to ask you for tamarind. I was asked for tamarind in the first year of my business for people who lived in Shimla and were retired officers, army officers, who sailed on Loch Derg. You must remember in Nina, the yacht club was started in 1832. So these people, that culture was there, and I got all that business. But I was very conscious that it wasn't enough, that I also had to get a pound of ham cut with a carving knife and brown bread and jam along with that. And that was our parallel path forever. And now I'm as comfortable buying wine in Spain, France and Italy and importing it. We have our own Parmesan made. We go out to make it in Italy. But we're still all about the beef that's over there, the brown bread that I make every day, the eggs that I take, break all the rules and ask me someday about rules. We have about 25 customers who would come irregularly with eggs and nothing is refused. Rhubarb, eggs, maybe in a month's time it'll be Grand Central for courgettes. And they'll be left outside the shop in the morning with a note on them in an orange box. Someone says, 15 pounds of courgettes, Nora Ryan, I'll call in later. And that goes on and on and on. And we do that. But we have our challenges, I have to say that. We're 33 years in business in Nina. But it hasn't changed in its philosophy.
Okay, obviously, you know, the philosophy is still sound. It goes back to your Mother's Day with the turkeys behind the forecourt. In your case as well, Brigitte, the philosophy of what you're doing is completely sound. But let's talk about the practicalities of the Irish business, like selling the Irish food business over the last 30 years. What's been the biggest change? You mentioned something to me on the phone, Peter, and I was struck by it because it came up twice yesterday, and you were kind of talking about the internet and broadband. It came up with two different panels yesterday about the difference good broadband has made. That was one thing you kind of pointed out to me when we talked.
Huge. Well, I was dragged kicking and screaming into the world of Twitter and Facebook by my children, who are, as I said, 30 to 25, and I was dragged into that world. And you know what? Here I am. I bounce over and back with Brigitte. We converse. You know, she's standing in Dean and DeLuga in New York, and she's answering a tweet of mine, and I'm at the Web Summit here in Dublin doing MC for the food or something like that. And it's the same as if we're standing together, and we're bouncing, talking, bouncing, constantly going on. And that is what is the most unusual thing, because I remember the first time that I bought a St. Tola goat's cheese. Now, we have to remember one thing, Jim, and I love all the people on that main stage, and I love all the people doing television programmes on RTE, and I love their glasses and their hairstyle and their imaging and the PR people behind them. We didn't invent food. Very, very, very important point. We didn't invent food. Theodora Fitzgibbon, Myrtle Allen, Florence Irwin, Maura Laverty, that produced recipes for hollandaise for everyone that ever went to school in Ireland. So the tradition is there. But to come back down to the point is that now we have connectivity. The first time I bought St. Tola, I wrote to Meg Gordon in Aina, and she was a great friend of Brigitte's, and I wrote her a postcard. And I'm telling you, that postcard was more reliable than any text today or email, because that cheese arrived by post. I bought cheese in the 1980s by post from France, in the days of pre-insulated boxes. Now, hard goat's cheese I bought. I bought that before we had an industry for goat's cheese in Ireland. But I suppose it has given us faster connectivity, but it has not replaced the whole thing about, you know, Charleville sold cheddar to the world without the days of email and all that. And we sold beef to the Napoleonic armies without email. You know what I mean? We sold horses to the Napoleonic armies without email. But what email has done is the absolute immediacy of me getting a WhatsApp from a guy that's picking grapes And then I walked down to the counter and I'm saying, I'm selling his wine. And I walked down to the counter and I talked to my customer. I said, I've just talked to Jean Jose in the last 5 minutes and they're working on, they're making wine actually today, and it's biodynamic and the moon and the whole lot. And I can make my story immediate. Yeah. And the customer feels that. I think that's what's pure magic about it. It's like Brigitte, I'm enthralled when she talks about her fishermen down on the Barrow on these traditional wooden boats that they've used forever. And I'm saying that's not a world I knew because I wasn't an expert in that. When she talks about that, I'm enthralled to think that these guys have been fishing there since medieval times, before the Normans. Still going on today. The commerce is with Brigitte. I'll guarantee you one thing. She's not the first Viking them fellas sold salmon to down there on the river in Waterford. And the powers and the whole lot of them. And that's the truth. So we need to reflect on that. While we have all of this, people were fed before. In Nina, every day at the famine, there were 6,000 people fed on soup. You know, so the whole idea is that we're not the first makers to set up soup business. And, you know, and I'm not the first person to sell beef in a field.
But also, what's happened then, obviously, is that, like, the business has been more professionalized in many ways in the last 20, 30 years. Do you agree with that, Richard?
Absolutely. And I mean, onwards and upwards. We have to keep going with the times. I'm just about to rebrand our website, make it mobile responsive. And for us, the mail order and online business is massive. You know, it's massive. And we generate all our mail. It's probably 40% of our turnover would be mail order all over the world. We ship to France, we ship to Germany, we ship to Japan, Hong Kong, wherever. France is massive. And it's something, actually, I was at a webinar or web seminar actually recently, and that's very little sales, online sales being done in Ireland. You know, there's very few websites that actually cater for that, and it's up and coming. It's where to go. The accessibility, I mean, some products would be available, would not be suited to be shipped. But others are. I mean, even beef. There's several people doing beef. Pat Whelan is one of them. There's several box schemes being done in Ireland where food is being shipped. You don't have to go. If you want to get direct from source, you don't have to go to the source. You can actually sit at home, order it in, and it comes shipped to you. So there's a huge movement in that area, and it's the way to go. It's where it's happening. And I think it's, you know, if you want to source something really well, it's actually an availability through the internet, and I think that's pretty amazing.
But I mean, the one big change I've kind of seen, I suppose, in the last like 10, 15 years is like Irish people's, like, I mean, I suppose, love affair with Irish food being a lot more pronounced and proud. When you talk there about, like, I mean, going in with the training you got from Dunstores in terms of confidence, it strikes me that, like, I mean, there's a confidence around Irish food right now that actually the punters as well have picked up on.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Brigitte and I were involved in the Web Summit, the Food Summit, as they call it. I was MC for the food for 3 days in it. And we fed 50,000 plates in Herbert Park, in tents like this at the time, working with Good Food Ireland, it was where the people of that, and everything was sustainable. The only catch was that the producer who sold the food had to come and work on the day.
Exactly.
Which was beautiful. I mean, that is, Good Food Ireland is amazing for that, to express how to, you know, meet the people. I mean, that's the one thing against, you know, it's fine with the internet, but there is, you can never beat that personal experience that you get when you go into Peter Ward's County Choice or go to the milk market and have a communication when you're buying. I mean, I buy a lot more when I go into places like that and can have them then and that, because it's just a feeling. It's a different feeling. The internet is very convenient, but you cannot, never, ever going to be able to replace that personal touch. And that's what we gave at the Food Summit. You know, you got in there, you tasted the food, and you met the person who actually produced that food. It's massive. For me, you just melt when you have that experience. It makes so much more sense in what you're doing, and it personalizes what you're doing. It's actually making and creating an experience, and that's what the likes of Good Food Ireland is about. That's what Peter Ward is a super duper, you know, he's such a pro at, and that communication, it just, and human interaction, in the end of the day, whatever about internet, but in the end of the day, that is what really counts.
I know, you say, every day I get caught in traffic on my street in Nina, and it's usually behind a 40-foot lorry with 16 tons of butter heading for the motorway. And I just think on it and I see the butter going out. Now, Borbia are the best in Ireland, are best in the world at selling food, be it China, to be America or anything like that. And I look at the lorry and I'm sitting behind it and somebody's bipping behind me and I think that every pound of butter is there has a story to tell that's going to end up on a plate somewhere. It was usually Northern Europe goes out in Ina, but that they have all a good feeling about food on the basis of a billboard poster, an internet campaign, an airport campaign, something like that, that they all, the ground is prepared very well all over the world for acceptance of Irish food, because there's no doubt about it, you can't go into the marketplace without having the ground prepared. So if somebody, you know, prepares the audience and says this is really good, creates the imaging, gets the Origin Green video out right across the world, and then the audience prepared, then the lorries roll out with the butter. But I just think of that Irish butter, there's no doubt about it, and the people that have been selling it for 30 and 40 years in the marketplace, it is an unprecedented story about one product coming from the earth, a pound of butter, and we have the world captured with butter.
And I mean, the setting of the whole Origin Green, it just, you know, putting the Irish food produce where it should be, which is a very high-end product from an extremely, in comparison, extremely clean environment. And that's what met me when I came from Sweden, when I came to the west coast of Ireland. That was the wow factor. You know, the lobsters, the crab, the oysters.
She was in love, this is it. She was in love, I have to say.
And totally, yeah. Yeah, blown away.
With more than the lobsters and the crabs, I have to say. The mussels and the periwinkles
isn't
the publicans and the bakers.
Isn't that life, you know? And that's what life is about.
Listoon Varn is the headquarters for matchmaking.
Yeah.
You're proof of that, you know, proof.
Well, no, actually, there was no, I was 18 and a half. There was absolutely no matchmaker needed at all for me. And I was actually, in fact, I wasn't out looking even. I wasn't even out looking. It just caught unaware.
And she's not impulsive in her business. She's measured, calculated, strategist.
You're embarrassing the poor woman.
But I'm telling you, at this stage, I'd say she went head over heels.
Peter, you're very right there. Couldn't do it. And I mean, it's actually really good to be in a situation where you just... It's a very...
You know what? It was all over a pint of Guinness and a Bowron.
Yes, even I met Brigitte, I was kind of thinking, this woman's not going to be shut up. You can't get a word in edgewise. Peter has managed to completely silence her, and she's blushing now.
Because I'm telling the truth about her.
See, let's go back to
well,
food.
You know, there was kind of chemistry, I suppose, between the Scandinavians. And
biochemistry?
Totally. And I think actually it's really interesting because, you know, the Scandinavians, they're a bit quieter, you know, as you may have noticed. And then also, but I did get my education in Ireland and meeting Peter, you know,
I definitely get seriously educated. I tell you what, do a comparison for us between, the Scandinavian approach to food and the Irish approach to food.
Well, funnily enough, I think that the Swedes are, you mean this great food, but they're a bit over-organized, surprisingly. You know, there's so much structure. In fact, the whole supermarket scene, it's actually quite difficult for smaller delis to set up and to be, we have completely lost the local butcher. It's very sad. The Swedes are very good at organizing everything, and it's just a little bit over-organized. It's a shame, you know. I mean, it's fantastic, and I do celebrate the fact that in Listonvarna we have our own craft butcher. It's amazing, using Burren lamb and beef. We're right beside our producer, and our we have a connection to our land. It has actually been lost a little bit. It's been much more urbanized in Sweden for the moment. Not to say that you can go out into the countryside and find, you know, small smokehouses and so on, but it actually it's a little bit too organized. And I think we really need to make sure that in Ireland, to keep that, the smaller, the butcher shops are just invaluable, absolutely invaluable.
Final question for both of you then. And thank you for your time and coming along and telling tales about each other. Final question. Looking into the future, you know, what's going to happen with the Burren Smokehouse? What's going to happen with Country Choice? Are you going to be happy to give it over to your daughters? Are they going to push you out in the end? What are your plans with Burren Smokehouse? Where's it going to go from here?
You go on the smokehouse, yeah.
Yeah, okay, on the smokehouse. I want to premierize our product. I want to put our products. I mean, we have our products in Selfridges, Harrods, and Fortnum & Mason.
Did you meet your man last week, Prince Charles?
I did. And the Duchess of Cornwall as well. Yeah. And we had a nice little chat. Her son, Tom Parker Bowles, he's involved in food in the UK. And he's doing some filming in Australia for the moment. But extremely warm people, very nice, and very passionate about food, you know, and food production, organic production, and sustainable food production. So, you know, Irish Origin Green is just down their alleyway. I was very impressed, really, with the
warmth. So what you're doing with your product, Bridget, is you're getting into high-end stores in London.
Yeah, well, I think that, of course, we want to be acceptable to everybody, but I have to pay a certain amount of money for the produce because I only want to get the very best of quality. So that means that I have to, you know, in order to survive, I have to get the price for my product. And I think that our products can be available everywhere, but also specialized cuts should be available in the very best of places, because it can. And I think it's really important that there's a movement to bring some of the very best of Irish produce to the very top, because we can, because we can do it, because the product, the provenance of the product should be showcased there. And then you have all the other levels in around as well, which is equally important. But it is actually world-class products from the west coast of Ireland, from the whole of Ireland. And I think it needs to be given the right position, you know, and be shown and be with pride how wonderful a product it is.
Okay, great. And last word to you then, Peter, about the future for Country Choice.
Country Choice was hugely challenged when the recession came in, because Nina is no different than any other town. The donut effect kicked in. We got 130,000 square foot of peripheral retail around the edge of the town, and the town centre was really challenged. Now, as a town centre, in our street, we've the best community. We've 9 good cafes in Nina. Good. Most of them, a lot of them worked for me over the years, but the standard is very high. But we don't have the footfall on the streets. We have 3 butchers within 2 minutes from our shop, but we're all challenged. So what did we do? Today is Sunday. I'm opened in Tattersall's Horse Trials with 3 girls out there selling beef. I'm opened in the Limerick Milk Market today with 2 girls, and my daughters have 9 staff over there. 6 years ago on Sunday, we ate smoked bacon and read newspapers, like the whole nation. We didn't do this, but my father used to say that the hungry eye sees far. So we had to get out, get on the road, whether we liked it or not, and create new businesses and look for new businesses. A sobering thought for us was that we were at a function the night that the AIB was, night before the AIB being guaranteed, and this was my lightning moment when I said, my God, this country is collapsing. I was in a group with 7 guys. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. We're having a drink in the Merion Hotel. And we said, we don't know what our future is. We just don't know. I had 3 children in college at the time. I said, I just don't know, but I know there's no banking system. Well, now, the reality is, since that time, my shop, for anyone that knows it, I would describe it as the width of 2 brush handles, but very long. We have paid 1.4 million wages since that night. We have paid 300,000 back to the bank, and we paid 300,000 in personal taxation. So that's 2 million euro. And that's all on the proceeds of honestly made and sold food in a challenged environment. So the answer is work, work, and the third thing is work. Now, for me and my business, the girls look and they see the way that we have worked to save that business in the last years. And we have a famous business, a very well-known business, but the wages have to be paid. 4,500 will have to be paid tomorrow morning in wages into the bank to staff. And that's there's no magic. We're selling ham and jam and the whole lot in a small shop. But the reality is, you asked me about, will the business survive? My family's life-work balance will be different than ours. They won't work the same way it worked. The 2 girls work very hard. They've told us they'll take the brand, they'll move it to a different platform, but they won't fall out of bed at 6 o'clock every Monday morning and rush in because there's somebody coming for tea and scone at 9:15 and they want that scone hot. They won't do that. We will continue to do that for another, my wife said, couple of years, non-defined, right? So that's the answer. But the brand will live on. It'll be new. It'll enter in new areas. The girls will take it. There's 2 brands. There's 3 brands. There's the Outsiders, There's Nutshed, which is a specific business that one of them moving into in Raw Food, which is very successful. Yeah. The Outsiders is like, you'd see them at, people have seen them at Electric Picnic in a big collaboration with friends doing sustainable food with lesser love vegetables, as they call them, from the Eco Village in Clochjordan. That's the Outsiders. And Country Choice on Tour is specifically what we do in the shop that's taken to the marketplace, that brands for us. That drives business back into my counter in Nina. Say people, Junction 25, come back to us. They will continue to do that for another few years. But my own business on the street in Kenyon Street, I can say to you, will only have a couple more years left. And that's by choice from ourselves. As soon as we can retire, we will. I want to have a shop in Galway. And I want to be selling books and cheese and maybe craft whiskey. Forget about the beer. It's too overdone. And I want to have a fat black Labrador under the counter and a sign on the window at 12, be opened at 12. And a sign on the window at 7 that says, gone walking the prom. We were up and then come back and open until 10 o'clock every night, from 12 in the day till 10 o'clock, and have a different lifestyle but continue to sell food. That's my dream.
Okay, well, best of luck with that. Thank you both very much for your time.
Many thanks to Peter and Brigitte for taking the time to join us at Banter, and thanks to Roz at Borbia and her team for all their help with Banter at Bloom. This podcast was produced by Banter series producer Tanya White. You can check out thisisbanter.com for news of our up-to-date Banter, plus you can also listen back to all the Banter podcasts to date. Bloom 2016 takes place at the Phoenix Park, Dublin from June 2nd to 6th, and keep an eye on bloominthepark.com for more details. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.